On this week's Another From Adam podcast, we are joined by 10-time Pro Bowl selection, Cleveland Browns offensive tackle, Joe Thomas, who last weekend extended his consecutive snap streak to 10,062 straight plays without ever having missed an offensive snap at any point in his 11-year NFL career. The Ironman streak has brought him a ton of attention, and the attention starts here on the Northern From Adam podcast. What has been the most surprising part of you continuing your streak and the attention it has received, because so many people have weighed in on it?
Yeah, I think that's exactly the most surprising part, is just the number of people from across different sports even that have noticed and waged an opinion about it, and, you know, just kind of said their congratulations. It's really been sort of a humbling experience.
Was there any one person that weighed in with congratulations that made you go, wow?
Well, I think that's easily LeBron James. Yeah. obviously, he's the king of the NBA, one of the greatest, if not the greatest player ever in basketball, and somebody that I've sort of idolized for a long time since I was a kid. Even we were the same age growing up, playing AAU basketball tournaments together. I remember watching him when I think we were 14 or 15 out in Vegas. And, you know, he's just somebody that I've always looked up to, and obviously the great things that he's done in his career. And for to have him take time out of his day to tweet about my 10,000 snap was really a memorable moment.
Do your paths ever cross there in Cleveland?
You know, we've run into each other a couple times. He's come out to a few Browns practices over the years, and I've seen him obviously at a few Cavs games, said hello, but really never had a chance to get to know him.
And you mentioned you played in that AAU tournament with him in Vegas when you were, what, 12 years old. How good a basketball player were you back in the day, Joe?
Well, I was nowhere near the player that he was. I was a pretty decent basketball player. I got recruited to play a few or smaller colleges, and I think it was pretty clear by the time I was a senior in high school that football was my future, not basketball.
How good was he back then, even as a 12-year-old? Did you know he was going to be the king?
Yeah, I think everybody knew. He was on the cover of the tournament handout that they gave to everybody, and people were already talking about him being the next Michael Jordan. I remember his games. We went to watch one of them, and there was like 5,000 people there for an AAU tournament basketball game, which was just unheard of. So even back then, everybody knew that he was going to be something special.
Joe, the streak now is over 11 years, 10,062 snaps. How much longer can you keep doing this?
That's a great question. I'm not sure. I think it all depends on if I can stay healthy, and I don't know, into the future, nobody really knows what the future holds, but I'm definitely going to do my best to be out there every week for my teammates and trying to help my team win.
How does your body feel, though?
Well, I feel like I've played 11 years in the NFL. I mean, there's no way around it. When you get up there into the double digits in the NFL, especially as a lineman, there's the bumps and bruises that you have to deal with that have accumulated over a lot of years and a lot of plays and a lot of practices. So it's just a constant battle at this age and this stage in my career to stay on the field and to stay healthy and to try to feel as well as I can come Sunday.
Well, we've got in your career, what, an LCL tear, 3 MCL strains, 2 high ankle sprains. Am I missing anything else that might have prevented you from continuing that streak?
Well, there's been plenty of stuff over the years that have definitely been close to keeping me out of games. I mean, just from tricep injuries and elbow injuries and ankle injuries and knee problems, you name it, I've pretty much dealt with it. But luckily, for the most part, all of them have been of the grade that you could still continue to play on it, even though you maybe weren't as effective as you wish you could be.
I know you've talked about it in the past, the closest the streak has come to ending, and I think you've alluded to October 12, 2014. What do you remember about that particular incident that nearly ended your streak?
Well, what I remember the most about it is just kind of the shock on my face and my line mates' faces when they saw somebody coming in to sub me out of the game. And because I think at that point, all of us were, you know, generally aware that I had not missed a snap in my career at that point. And to give that streak up just to get me out of a game that we were handily ahead of would have been a bad way to end the streak.
Who'd they send in for you at that point? Vincent Painter?
Yeah, Vincent Painter. He was my backup that week, and certainly he wasn't expecting to play at all, but it was one of those rare games where we were blowing the Steelers out at home, and I think the head coach, Mike Pettine, at the time was interested in getting his better players off the field if possible to just get him rested up for the next week, and I don't think any thought even really went into it when they sent Vincent in for me.
I would make the argument that your streak is every bit as impressive as Cal Ripken's. How much attention did you pay to Ripken's streak when he set his, and have you ever had any interaction with him?
You know, I never have had any interaction with Cal. I do remember when he broke the streak, or broke the record with his consecutive starts. And I remember what he said was something along the lines of, I'm tired, or something like that, when he finally just decided to kind of take a day off. And you could tell that the build-up to breaking the record played a big part in anxiety and his anxiousness. And, you know, I felt some of the same things, just kind of as more people started talking about it and sort of talking about it as if it was a foregone conclusion. I felt sort of the stress and the anxiousness build inside of me. And so in many of the same ways as I'm sure he was glad that he was gone and passed that milestone, I feel the same way.
Has the streak become a burden at all, Joe?
I wouldn't say it's become a burden, but certainly being asked about it as much as I had leading up to it, it became something that I was happy to not talk about.
Yep.
And so I think now that we've moved past it, I'm happy that it is sort of a footnote now, and it is not the focus of our preparation in any week.
We'll be back with more from Browns left tackle Joe Thomas on the Northern From Adam podcast after this. Football season has begun, but it's not too late to get closer to the game you love with DraftKings 1 Week Fantasy Football. This Sunday, DraftKings is hosting a $100,000 Pick'em contest that's totally free to enter. Pick'em's the newest way to play 1 Week Fantasy Football. Drafting your team is faster than ever. DraftKings has organized players into 8 tiers. All you have to do is select one player from each tier. Choose between public contests with big cash prizes or private contests where you can compete against a group of your friends. DraftKings also has beginner and casual contests where you'll play against people of similar skill level. The best part is you get to draft a new team each week without any commitment. So get to DraftKings.com now and use promo code Schefter, S-C-H-E-F-T-E-R, Schefter, to play in DraftKings free contest with $100,000 in total prizes this Sunday. That's promo code Schefter to compete for your share of $100,000 in total prizes. The contest is totally free to enter. Why wouldn't you try? DraftKings, the game inside the game. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. So let's move on from the streak then. And you play the Indianapolis Colts this week. And for the first time in 2 years, the Cleveland Browns are favorites. Is there a sense of overconfidence in the building, Joe?
Yes, of course. No, I don't think we as a team really look at the betting line too much, but certainly that's going to be one of the storylines this week we'll be asked about. And I think that just proves that we're headed in the right direction. We're making progress, and I think people are recognizing that this team's a lot better than the team that we were last year.
Is it a lot better than the team you were last year?
I feel we're definitely better. I think clearly the young guys that were all rookies last year now in their second year, and they're a little bit more comfortable with the system that we're in. And I think we're just better overall. We've got better players, and people are more comfortable with the system. I think our defense is playing better than they were last year, and I see no reason why we can't go on a little bit of a winning streak.
Oh, I liked it. That'd be kind of fun to see.
I agree.
Joe, what was the best Browns team that you have played on to date in your 11 years?
Well, the best team that I've played on was my rookie year. We were 10-6, and we were one game away from making the playoffs. Actually, we tied with Pittsburgh at 10-6 atop the division, but they had beaten us twice, so they won the tiebreaker and thus got to go to the playoffs, and we were one spot out from heading to the playoffs.
So you've never gone to the playoffs?
This is accurate.
What would it mean for you to get to go to the playoffs? Forget about the Super Bowl. I mean, let's just start with the playoffs. Yeah. What would it mean for you to do that?
Well, I think it would mean everything. From the moment that I got here, my goal has been to help turn the Browns into a consistent winner, to turn this team into the playoff contender that they were, in the 80s and the early 90s. And that's always been my mission and my dream. And I can still close my eyes and picture myself running out of the tunnel for a playoff game at First Energy Stadium and hearing the crowd and feeling the buzz and the electricity that the city would have if and when we make the playoffs.
How do you keep that from wearing you down over the years, playing 11 years, not going to the playoffs, being the Iron Man, being the guy that everybody looks to as the focal point on that team? How do you prevent that from wearing you down mentally and physically?
Well, I think if you think about it like a fan or an outside observer, it's easy to get depressed and get dragged down with the record that we've had since I've been here. But I think as a player, it's easy for me to find comfort in my routine and my process that I go through every week and the focus that I have on trying to do my job to the best of my ability. That really gives me comfort, and it helps me, especially in difficult times like last year when we were going through the terrible losing streak. It kind of keeps me centered and keeps me focused.
You know, I'll tell you a story that you don't know right now. A couple of years ago, it was right at the trade deadline. Trade deadline was creeping up, 4 o'clock Eastern. I'm sitting exactly where I'm sitting right now as I'm talking to you. And somebody from ESPN, a reporter from ESPN, sends in an email that says, Joe Thomas has been traded to the Denver Broncos for, I don't know what it was, a first and a third round pick at the time, something to that effect. And I hit reply all, and I said, hold on. This trade has not gone through yet. And the reporter filed the story as if it were done, and it wasn't.
Wow.
And I think that gives you an idea, though, of how close 2 years ago you came to being a Denver Bronco. How aware were you at the time that a trade could be possible?
I would say for at least two, maybe 3 years leading up until that day, there had been various amounts of chatter around my name as far as a potential trade goes. Typically, Green Bay was one of the spots, being that I was from Wisconsin and they were looking for a left tackle at the time. Yeah. And then the other spot, Denver, of course, because they had the great defense. And at the time, you know, they had Peyton Manning and they were looking for a left tackle to protect him. So I was generally aware of it. And then as that specific date came up, it seemed like the intensity of the discussions in the media and from the things that I was hearing were maybe ratcheting up, and Denver was really serious about it. It was actually getting in the negotiation phase. And the last I heard before the trade deadline was that the deal was not going to happen and that I wasn't getting traded. And so I remember going out to practice in our indoor thinking, okay, good. I'm just glad that's finally over with. You know, the trade deadline is going to be here in 3 or 4 hours. And then I don't have to answer those questions. I don't have to worry about getting traded anymore this year. And then needless to say, there was that flurry right before the deadline where it almost happened. And I came off the field and went in the lunchroom and somebody and said, dude, you almost got traded to the Broncos like 10 minutes ago. And it was one of those moments where it didn't really even sink in for a few days. And until I realized, until people in our media were telling me, like, look, there was a deal on the table that was almost done.
Yeah.
And it was just a matter of the Browns saying yes to something that they had almost previously agreed to. And I would have been packing my bags to go to Denver.
And you know what kept that deal from happening was, I believe, and I'm not going to be far off if I'm not exactly right, but I believe that Denver was willing to send, let's just say it was a 1 and a 4, and they wanted back like a third two. It was and Cleveland was offering a 4. It was like a 1 round difference.
Yeah.
In the disagreement on the compensation part, Otherwise, most of the parameters have been agreed to, but they just could not and would not budge on that one detail, on that one last pick that was about one round apart that would have sent you to Denver, which would have been – you would have won a Super Bowl there, Joe.
Yeah, it's just, you know, crazy to think about if that one little domino would have fallen and how close it was to falling, how different my career, my life would have been from that point going forward. And like you mentioned, I heard that exact same thing from one of our beat writers, Mary Kay Cabot. She's usually got her finger on the pulse of what's going on. And she was the one that came up to me and told me, hey, they were only like a tiny, tiny sliver of a couple points on the draft trade scale away from trading you. And like you said, it was like a third or a fourth round pick that they were squabbling over. And otherwise it would have been done.
That was not the last time your name has come up in trade discussions with Denver or other teams. Could you see the day ever, as this trade deadline comes closer, as we get into this offseason, could you see the day ever of being dealt away from Cleveland?
Well, like you mentioned, it seems like every year there's a few teams that need a left tackle. They have the quarterback, but the fan base or the media thinks that they need a new left tackle. And then, of course, because Cleveland has not been in the discussion of a playoff team, my name's always one of the names that comes up as a potential trade bait. But truthfully, I do think that my chances of getting traded are kind of over. I mean, I could be wrong. Something crazy could happen, but just being where I am in my contract, I've only got 1 year left on my deal in Cleveland. I turned 33 this year. It's my 11th season. Typically, you're not seeing guys that are in their 11th year and 1 year away from being done with their contract getting traded. I think that was something that was more of a potential to happen when I was, you know, in year 7, 8, 9, when you still had two or three more years left on your contract. So I would be surprised if anything did happen this year or next year.
Well, let me say this. I was out in Denver covering the Broncos in the mid-1990s when they traded, I believe it was a couple of draft picks to Minnesota for a then, I think, 32-year-old left tackle named Gary Zimmerman, who helped them win a Super Bowl. And Zim was the best. Zim was great. I don't know if you've ever gotten the chance to talk to him or know him. A very unique guy. I love that guy. Very quiet. You know, offensive linemen are a unique breed, and they're all very similar. And they're strong personalities. They're in their own world. Don't like the attention. Don't like the spotlight, which is why it's been strange for you since the streak happened to get all this attention. But even though you say you're 33 with 1 year left in your contract, I would say we have not heard the last. I could be wrong. We have not heard the last of your name coming up. But you say you think you're past that. Do you say just for the reasons that you laid out, or has anybody with the Browns organization said something to you about the fact that they can't trade you because you mean so much to that city and franchise?
Well, I think Hugh Jackson and Sashi Brown have said repeatedly since they took over that they're not going to trade me. But I think like any smart front office would do is if they were given an opportunity to look at a trade, they would certainly look at it. And if somebody blew them away, I wouldn't think there'd be any reason why they wouldn't trade for me. But I think, like I said, that combination of, you know, where I am in my career and my contract, and the fact that it would really take, I think, a trade that would blow the doors off Cleveland to make it happen. I'm not sure those stars would line up, but I do think you are correct that I'm sure as the trade deadline comes up this year, there's going to be some chatter about me potentially being traded, because it does seem like there is a dearth of quality offensive tackles in the NFL now more than ever, and especially at the left tackle position. There's, you know, plenty of teams across the NFL that have a fan base that love their quarterback but don't like their offensive line or their tackles or their left tackle specifically. So I'm sure there'll be some chatter, but I don't know if we'll get to a situation like we got to a few years ago when Denver and Cleveland were actually discussing numbers and going back and forth.
Well, you know, it's funny. I just did a radio show in Denver on Monday this week. Garrett Bowles, their first round pick, goes down with an injury, and they said, which left tackle could Denver trade for? I said, do you think that they are just out there that you can just go trade for? And they said, what about Joe Thomas? So you're the name that never goes away, Joe. It never goes away.
Yeah, I think the combination of the fact that Cleveland hasn't been in the playoff picture lately and the fact that, you know, as one of the better left tackles in the league, you're just naturally the first name that everyone thinks about when the team is in need of that left tackle position in the middle of a season.
So let's just say somehow, some way, the stars aligned, it came together, and you wound up being traded. How would you feel if you were given the chance to go play for a contender that could win the Super Bowl and at the same time have to leave a city that you've become so entrenched in over the last 11 seasons?
Mm-hmm. Well, it would be really difficult. You know, my family, my life is here in Cleveland. I've spent the majority of my adult life here, put down roots. I feel like a Clevelander. I feel like a lifer. So for me to have to leave here would be really tough and really sad, to be honest. But certainly, you know, if that did happen, I would make the most of whatever situation I ended up being put in and, you know, try to help my team the best as I can to do whatever I can to help them win.
Hey, if the King could leave Cleveland, then the guy that he played against in AAU in Las Vegas one day also could leave Cleveland. But that's a topic for another day. You brought up the lack of offensive linemen out there, why there is a dearth of them. Why is that? Because it seems like this year, and I'm not asking you to comment on this, but it seems like offensive line play may be worse than ever before, and it seems like more teams are in search of quality offensive linemen. Why is the league's offensive line situation where it's at today?
Well, I think it's a combination of a lot of factors, but the biggest couple factors that I see is, one, the lack of pro-style offenses that are being taught in college. You see the majority of college offenses being those spread offenses that really don't have any concepts that are similar to the pro game. You're not teaching offensive linemen pass-blocking technique that's similar to what they'll have to do in the NFL, and you're not teaching them any of the run-blocking technique that's similar to the NFL. So you're basically getting a college player in the NFL that doesn't have any more polish to him than he did when he came out of high school. And so I think that really puts players behind the eight ball, because the offensive line, more than any other position, takes the most amount of repetitions and practice and technique, and it's the most unlike any other position on the field, because as an offensive lineman, you're doing everything going backwards for the most part, and that's just so unnatural to what we do in our normal life that it just takes a lot of repetitions to be proficient at the technique. And then I will also say, I think what you're seeing in the NFL is a lack of value on veteran players, specifically across the NFL. There's more teams value these young draft picks, these young players with potential, and they're not valuing the veteran players like they used to. And so you see guys like my teammate John Greco, who got cut a few weeks ago, who's a tremendous offensive lineman. But if you're not a team that thinks of themselves as a Super Bowl contender, they're going to try to get those young players and put them in there. Versus when I got into the league, it seemed like most offensive lines across the NFL were veteran groups that had guys that are mostly years 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. And they weren't afraid to hold on to those older guys. And then finally, I think the other problem is, it's good for defenses, bad for offenses, is you see defensive linemen that are so good and so refined with their techniques of rushing the passer. And it's not as much of a gap control philosophy on defense as it was when I first got in the NFL, where you got your four big guys that bull rush and they hold their gap, and it's more of a gap sound, fundamentally sound defense. Whereas now you've got a bunch of guys that are linebackers that they're blitzing two in a gap. They're running all over the field. They're dropping into coverage. They're blitzing from different angles. And then they've got these pass rush coaches year-round that are teaching them these exotic hand-fighting techniques. And so you're seeing just such a jump in players' actual ability to rush the passer. And so I think the combination of all those three things is why you're seeing offensive lines that look as poor as they do.
You mentioned some teams making moves, not holding on to veteran players, and the Browns have done that. You get a free pass. You could say anything you want. Who's the one player who has been through there that you were surprised that your team got rid of? Because there have been a lot of them over the years.
Yeah. I would say two guys. I think I was really surprised when we let go of Mitchell Schwartz a couple years ago in free agency, because he did go so cheaply to Kansas City. So it's not like we got outbid for him. It was a position of need for us, so that was surprising to me that we would let go of him without a good backup plan. Mm-hmm. And especially at the state of tackles, offensive tackles in the NFL right now, it's not like you're finding them behind every tree. I mean, just about every team in the NFL feels like they could use an extra really good quality tackle because it's such a challenging position to find good players at. So I think that was sort of the combination of surprises for me why we let go of Mitchell. But also I was pretty surprised when we let go of John Greco a few weeks ago because from a contract position, his contract made sense. It wasn't really crazy. So it was easy to keep him from a financial standpoint as a backup. And he was such a good player still at all three inside positions, guard and center. And he had so much experience with us. And we saw last year what happens if you do have those injuries and you don't have reliable backups, how it can really sidetrack your season. So that was another big surprise for me. But I think it just kind of goes along with the youth movement that you are seeing in the NFL where teams are placing so much more value on younger players and undervaluing, in my opinion, the veterans, the older players in the league.
And that's been the frustrating part about your team is it's made some really good moves, and then it's made some moves that you just say, what is that about? And it's prevented the team from continuing to grow as quickly as some would like, in my opinion, neither here nor there. You brought up defensive linemen that are being trained with these hand movements and specialized pass rush moves. Who is, over the 11 years, the toughest defensive lineman that you've gone against and the one guy that's kept you up at night?
Well, I've always said that I think Dwight Freeney, when I was playing him, you know, 7, 8, 9 years ago when he was in the prime of his career, was probably the toughest challenge from a pure pass rushing stance because every single play, whether it was run or pass, he was running up the field to rush the quarterback. And while that technique gave up a lot more in the run game, it made it really challenging, and you really had to bring your A game to play against him because of how talented he was at rushing the passer. And you see that even this week. I hear the Falcons are talking about bringing him in, and it's like year 16 or 17 for him. But his spin move is still so effective, yeah, even after all these years. Nobody really was able to figure out how to block that thing.
I checked with them yesterday. They told me that they weren't planning to do that right now, but I guess those things are subject to change, and he can still bring that pass rush. Now, I told you before about that trade that nearly went through that a reporter actually filed was done 2 years ago. Another little interesting story for you. When I get to go to Canton each summer for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, my favorite place to eat, Joe, is Mission Barbecue.
Oh, now we're talking.
I see that. Now, I know that you're a partner in both Cleveland area Mission Barbecue restaurants. And for those who don't know, Mission's Barbecue, its mission is to proudly serve those who serve, soldiers, firefighters, police officers, first responders. I know you've catered Mission Barbecue for local servicemen and women. I got to tell you, Joe, that stuff is awesome. What do we got to do to get a Mission Barbecue near where I live in New York?
Hey, man, it's a done deal. You and me, we can go in on a partnership, and we'll open one in New York so you can happily eat it every day.
I'm going to get you my number. I'm going to DM you on Twitter. I'm telling you, I want in on Mission Barbecue in New York. And, in fact, I was in the one in Canton with my boss, and he wants one in Connecticut. We could put one in Bristol, Connecticut, too, while we're at it. We're in.
Hey, sounds good. I'm in.
What do we got to do to make that happen? Seriously.
Yeah, I think they're great. I mean, I've been really proud of my association with them. Not only is their food, is their barbecue just top-notch, excellent, but I think their mission is really special, too, the way they've dedicated their company to serving the people that serve in the military, the police, the EMTs, the first responders, the firefighters. And they do a lot to give back in all the communities that they serve. So it's been something that's been a real sense of pride for me.
How did you come to discover Mission Barbecue?
So actually, the founder is a guy that grew up in Wisconsin in the same city as my mom, believe it or not. And so we always had that Wisconsin connection, and he was the VP at Under Armour of marketing when they signed me. So he was actually the guy that signed me to my Under Armour deal when I was a rookie. And so he worked with Under Armour for a few more years, ended up retiring, and him and I just became friends. We remained friends after he retired, and he always told me he had this passion for barbecue and he wanted to open a restaurant. And my dad was a banker, and he primarily focused on lending to restaurants, and he always told me, even before I got in the NFL, whatever you do with your money, don't invest in restaurants because they never work out. So I had that in the back of my head when Bill would tell me this, and I always kind of brushed it off. But as soon as I had the chance to actually go to one of the restaurants and eat it, I knew instantly that even though I should never invest in a restaurant, that this was actually going to be the exception to the rule because the food was just so outstanding. And Bill's just been a fantastic CEO of the company. I think it's been a lot of fun, and it's been a lot of fun introducing my teammates and friends on the road to the great food at Mission Barbecue.
It's fantastic, and I really mean that. I would recommend that for anybody. And for those who don't know, one other thing about you, you are an avid gardener. You maintain a 900-square-foot garden. How did that come to be that you have a garden that includes peppers, tomatoes, green beans, cucumbers, garlic, asparagus? How does that happen, Joe?
Well, it's actually funny. My wife had a big garden growing up. They had like a U-pick strawberry patch that used to sell strawberries. And so she always had this passion for gardening through her family. And I was never into it, but she kind of got me into it our first year in Cleveland. And we had the garden together, and then I just fell in love with it right away. And then every year after that, I kind of took on more and more responsibility with it, to the point when we started having kids that I just took over the whole thing. And now I'm sort of the sole gardener out there, take care of it, get to do all the harvesting and bring the kids out sometimes to pick some tomatoes and green beans with me. And it's just been something that kind of gets my mind off of football and gives me something to do that's really a lot of fun and really rewarding.
That's outstanding. I guess people wouldn't guess that. Before I let you go, one thing we like to do on this podcast is something called Last Call. And I like to ask people some last questions. When was the last time you cried, Joe?
The last time I cried actually was last year after we beat the San Diego Chargers for our and only win of the season. I got into the locker room and saw Hugh Jackson there, and we embraced in a hug. And for some reason, only God will know, but I just broke down in tears, and I just was kind of overwhelmed by the moment.
He actually recounted that story in the video to you that the Browns put up online. Dan Murphy did a great job with that. And there are all these people with all these great words about you and what you've meant to their career, including Mitchell Schwartz and John Greco. And he recounted that story. He said when you guys locked eyes, like lovers, I guess, you just broke down and started crying.
Yeah, it was one of those spontaneous things that even to this day, I'm not sure why I was so overcome by emotion, because we only won one meaningless game. But I think it was just the culmination of all the work and the bloods, the sweat that we put into that every single week, and to finally have that payoff and get that monkey off our back to get the win, especially in the manner that it came with a block kick. And I think just the moment, the emotion that we go through every Sunday just finally came to a head, and I couldn't control myself.
Blood, sweat, and tears. All right, Joe, if you had one meal left, and I may know the answer to this already, last meal on earth, what would it be and where?
Well, that's easy. It would be at Mission Barbecue. And it would
another plug.
All the meats that they have on the menu, plus the mac and cheese and the cornbread are pretty good, too.
And who would be invited to that meal if I said invite any four people you want, dead, alive, historical, family, friends, whoever? Who are you bringing to that last meal at Mission, Joe?
Well, clearly Adam Schefter, the great Shefty, would be there.
And then, I hope not Peter Schaefer with us. I hope not Peter Schaefer, too.
never Peter Schaefer. But Shefty, George Washington, Michael Jackson, and Bob Marley.
Man, I am in for that dinner. Like, what could be better than that group of people at Mission Barbecue? That would be awesome.
Absolutely.
Hey, Joe, I want to thank you for taking the time today. Congratulations on the streak. Congratulations on an incredible career. And when you get into Canton, Ohio, I'm calling lunch at Mission that weekend when you get in, if you got the time.
Hey, it's a deal. We'll do it on my dime, too.
Thanks, Joe.